today on the Pure Sweat Basketball Show.
You know, in general, I think more coaches need to understand CEO mentality. And I think a lot of CEOs need to understand coaching mentality.
Maybe I led you to believe it was easy when it wasn't. Maybe I made you think my highlights started at the free throw line and not in the gym.
Turn my headphones up!
Let's eliminate the will to win and think about the will to prepare to win.
That's how winning is done!
It's about being a great teammate. It's about being accountable to one another. It's about being tough. It's about doing the right things for each other, but it's about doing it every day.
This is Fran Frischeller from ESPN, and you are listening to the Pure Sweat Basketball Show.
What's up, y'all? It's Alan Stein, and welcome to the Pure Sweat Basketball Show, where every episode is a micro clinic designed to serve players, coaches, and parents. This show is sponsored by Dr. Dish, the architects of the top shooting machine in the world. In today's episode, I continue my conversation with Jamie Beckler, a former college basketball coach and current motivational speaker and author. Jamie just wrote The Leadership Playbook, which is a must-read for all players and coaches when it comes out in July. Please visit theleadershipplaybook.com for more info and to pre-order copies for your entire program. But before we get cranking, did you know that Crossover offers professional-grade film breakdown services at a price that most high schools can afford? It's simple. You give them your game film, and they give you insane analytics and shot charts that can be viewed by anyone in your program on any mobile device. Visit crossoverwithak.com to see why they are changing the game. All right, let's keep talking shop with Jamie. Now, I can hear in your voice and everything I've seen and read about you, I mean, I still very much consider you a coach, but you've decided to switch from actually coaching a basketball team and coaching entrepreneurs, coaching CEOs, coaching corporate teams and organizations and other groups. What made you decide to make that pivot, pun intended?
You know, I had been doing a lot of speaking when I was a college coach. You know, I was going in and speaking to a number of high school teams in the area, a lot of like Kiwanis, Lions Club, Chambers of Commerce. So I enjoyed the speaking aspect, and I was doing a lot of leadership training on my teams because I came to the conclusion that if they were better leaders and stronger character people, then we would probably have, I would at least have less headaches, less drama, but our teams would perform better and they would turn out better in the long run from a success or a significance standpoint. And so as I'm doing that, I'm realizing, man, I have a passion for coaching, but I also have a passion for helping out as many people as possible. And so I was like, you know what, this is an area that I think I would be good at. I could use my strengths and there's a need for it out there. You go to all these basketball clinics and there aren't many people talking about true leadership, or at least there's not as many people talking about that. And I'm like, you know, I think there's a need for that with coaching. I think coaches could use this. And so, you know, I went into administration for a couple years, thinking that maybe if I went into administration, this would be the area, you know, this is how I could do that. But once I went into administration, I realized I was actually doing less leadership as an administrator. Mm-hmm. I was doing much more managing. I was doing much more paperwork and was having so much less of a influence or impact on people. I was just, you know, a paper pusher essentially. And so I got out of organized athletics last year or a year ago and did this full time. And I got my John Maxwell leadership certification.
Nice.
John Maxwell's written over 100 books on leadership. Pretty much outside of the Bible, he's probably written more. He's probably had more stuff that he's written about leadership and character than anybody. So I went through his training certification for, took me about 7 months, and I was doing that while I was an administrator. So.
Oh, neat.
And so I was doing that in my off time and when I had it. And, you know, so it's been a great transition. It's been fun, but it's almost like, you know, when you go from an assistant coach to a head coach, or, you know, you just get out of an industry and go into a different industry. You don't know what you don't know. There's
right.
So many things that I've been learning on the fly, but it's been great. You know, when you see those aha moments with either a coach or a player, it's like, oh, I never thought of that. You know, that's pretty exciting when you see them actually wake up when
yes.
you're speaking to them, and it's like, oh, I'll stop texting now because what this guy just said, I never thought about that. And that's pretty cool. So those are fun moments.
Absolutely. The hairs on the back of my neck are standing up because a lot of our listeners know I'm kind of following in your footsteps and doing something very similar now. And it's amazingly refreshing and reassuring to hear you saying the things that you're saying. And since you have a nice lead on me, as far as you're more ingrained in the corporate world now, what are some of the, you said before that you didn't know what you didn't know, but you've learned some of these things now. What are some of the things that you've learned now that you're addressing, not players and coaches anymore, but folks in the corporate world, but still teaching the exact same types of lessons?
Yeah. You know, the corporate world or athletics, there's a lot of parallels and a lot of similarities, and a lot of these same leadership principles or business principles apply. And I think that, you know, in general, I think more coaches need to understand CEO mentality. Mm. And I think a lot of CEOs need to understand coaching mentality. I think there's a strong crossover, with the business world and coaching. But one thing that I see that frustrates me, and it's the same in coaching as well, but the thing that frustrates me is sometimes people don't want to change. They want other people to change. Mm. So as a coach, you know, I was guilty of this as a coach. You know, how many times would I say, this player is such and such? You know, this player is soft. This player is, you know, dumb. This player is, you know, whatever, fill in the blank. And every year I'd be saying the same thing. Well, you either have to recruit different players or you need to start developing your people. Mm. Because every year you're saying, you're putting it on these players that there's something, and that's why something's not going right. Well, in the corporate world, you see it all the time. A CEO or the vice presidents will bring you in as a consultant, or they'll bring you in as a speaker to try to change middle management or change these people, the salespeople. Well, in reality, their culture, their vision has already been set by the higher ups, and it's not a good vision and it's not a good culture, or they're not living it out daily, but they want other people to change so that they get different results, but they don't want to change themselves, or they don't have time for coaching because they know it all, but these other people need coaching. Well, it starts at the top. Yes, you know, you look at the New England Patriots. They're not the New England Patriots because, you know, some water boy or, you know, some equipment manager is doing something, or, you know, an offensive lineman's doing something. It's because at the top, the owner sets a vision and he has a general manager and a coach that are on the same page, and they're reinforcing that vision. And then those players, the team members that they have, are doing, are fitting into what that vision is as well. So it's a whole culture. And we talk a lot about culture nowadays. And sometimes I think culture gets glossed over.
Yeah.
Or what we think of culture too many times is that it's just your five core values.
Right.
Or these are the five things that we believe. Or this is our mission statement. Or this is what's on a wall in our office. That's only a beginning of culture, is understanding who you are, why you do things, or what is most important. What gets lost is the daily reinforcing of that, those values. So, you know, when I was an administrator, I had a secretary. She was the face of our program in terms of if you came into the office, she was the first one that greeted you. If you called, she was the one that answered the phones. Well, I could have these great five or six core values up on a wall, but she was the one that let you know what the culture was. And
yeah.
So if I came in that day and I had a bad attitude, or I was grumpy, or I was complaining, all of a sudden she's going to take on my attitude. And so that's then going to be the culture. That's going to be what people see. And I can send as many memos, emails, or put up as many pretty posters as I want, but I'm living it out daily with my actions and what I'm reinforcing and what I'm promoting and emphasizing. And so a lot of times when you're going out and working with corporate people, or it doesn't matter if you're a high school principal, you know, you have the same ability to affect that culture. And it's not just with the emails you send out, and it's not what you just said at that one meeting at the start of the year. And how many times as coaches, you know, we do this. I was guilty of this as a coach. You have a great team building activity in September, and maybe you allude to it once or twice during the year, but it was just a fun thing that's memories, but you didn't build upon it. or you tell them these are the five things we're going to be about this year, but then you don't reinforce that every day in practice or every week when you're meeting with them again. It's kind of just something, well, I did it, so I'm building culture. Well, no, you didn't really build culture. All you did was say something cool.
Yeah, that was just a flash in the pan. And I love that. And I mean, it's amazing that there's so many values I believe you and I share. So from what it sounds like is, and this is the terminology I've always used, you need to create your identity first with your group. I mean, who are we? What are we about? What is it we're trying to do? And then once you've created that vision, which I love that you use that word, then it's a matter of collectively creating the standards that you need to make sure that that vision comes true. And then I've always believed culture is how well you uphold those standards on a daily basis. And it sounds like you and I may use slightly different terminology, but we're talking about the same things. That culture can't just be a buzzword, and it can't be a poster in the office that has five pillars on it. It has to be the behaviors and the decisions and the habits that your entire group has on a daily basis. Well, that's all I got. This show is done, D-O-N-E. We really appreciate you investing your time with us. I hope we helped you raise your game. If you didn't catch part one of this interview, trust me, you need to go back and listen and make sure you come back for part three, our final installment. Also, check out theleadershipplaybook.com and jamiebeckler.com. That's JAMYBECHLER.com. Major respect to Dr. Dish for transforming purposeful training with their unparalleled shooting machines. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. All right, it's time to get back in the gym.